The research is clear. When local news reporting decreases, waste and corruption in government and political division go up, and civic engagement goes down. This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. I'm Lou Gumm. Today on the podcast, we're joined by Chris Klein, who is wrapping up his tenure as president of the Arizona Media Association. During a period of rapid change for journalism and public media, Klein has played a key role in advocating for local news, supporting media organizations across the state, and reinforcing the importance of a strong independent press in all Arizona communities.
Everybody isn't necessarily coalescing around a radio station or a TV station or a newspaper or even a website or an app. Everyone has their preferred ways to consume content.
The threats to local media, how the industry in Arizona is responding, and the role you can play in making local news better. That's coming up on Arizona Edition.
Funding for Arizona Edition comes from listeners just like you. Your continued support allows us to bring you insightful conversations about issues and events impacting our community. Thanks to you, we are able to highlight the people and voices of Yuma and La Paz counties and encourage civil conversations around water, agriculture, healthcare, education, and much more. Please continue to tune in to Arizona Edition, and thank you for helping us keep our community informed.
This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. I'm Lou Gumm. According to a 2025 report on the state of local news, print newspaper circulation dropped 70% between 2005 and 2025, with more than 40% of all local newspapers closing. 50 million Americans have little or no access to a reliable source of local news. Newspaper jobs have shrunk by more than three quarters over the last two decades. In most states, 39, there are fewer than 1,000 journalists working. And while public media filled some coverage area gaps in 90% of U.S. counties, federal funding cuts threaten the smallest and most rural stations in the network. 213 counties now have no local news source, up from 206 just last year. The research also tracked over 300 media startups in the last 5 years, but they're primarily located in urban areas, are often ideological, and not filling the gaps in local coverage in rural or less affluent areas. Today, we're joined by Chris Klein, the outgoing president of the Arizona Media Association. Over the course of his tenure, Klein has been a strong advocate for local journalism, media innovation, and the vital role a free press plays in Arizona communities. From evolving technology and shifting audience expectations to funding model breakdowns and increasingly ideological ownership structures, the threats to local media are varied and ongoing. As Klein prepares to step away from his leadership role at AMA, we're taking time to reflect on the impact of his work, those challenges facing the media industry, and what lies ahead for Arizona's news landscape.
So I'm a guy that grew up in Phoenix, grew up in Arizona, and knew that media was in my blood as a kid, but knew when I turned 18, I needed to get as far away from home as possible because I feel like that's what most 18-year-olds want to do. So I went to college in Washington, D.C., and I got a degree in journalism. I worked for CNN, and then I realized there's something good back in Arizona, and I missed the dry heat. I missed the cacti, and so I came home, and I became a reporter. I worked in print at the Arizona Republic. And I worked in TV news, both at the NBC affiliate in Phoenix. And then I spent 12 years at the ABC affiliate out of Phoenix, where I held roles from reporter to producer to executive producer. And then I spent the last chunk of time there as the news director running the news operation out of Phoenix, which was humbling and so much fun. And oh boy, so exhausting. You know that feeling.
Yeah, the news director job, when you stepped into that, I know for me that was a real kind of sea change in the way that I approached my work because the responsibility obviously expands quite significantly. What were some of the lessons you learned from being a news director?
I learned that every human being thinks and operates differently, and I couldn't put everybody in the same box, and I couldn't talk to everybody in the same way. And I became a better human being just dealing with other human beings in the job, because I had to learn how to adjust my tone and I had to learn to listen. And I also had to put myself in other people's shoes in ways that perhaps you aren't used to doing unless you have a 100-person team. And we were very fortunate to have a 100-person newsroom at the time that you're working with and navigating through just all of the intricacies of issues that come up.
Yeah, big market, decent sized staff you had at ABC in Phoenix. What made you decide to take the step into sort of an industry leader kind of role?
So in 2018, there was an opening where the predecessor at the association that I've been leading for the last 7 or 8 years was retiring after 30 years in the job. And it just so happened that we know that I think we all have experienced in life that sometimes it's about timing, it's about who you know, and it's about the stars aligning. And my boss was the board chair at the time, and my boss knew that I was hungry to at least explore something next is the next step in my career path. And there was at the time what was kind of not in a bad way, but a sleepy association that had been around for a half a century and represented TV and radio stations all across the state, but needed some new life and a new mission and a new purpose. And so I kind of jumped at the chance to be a voice for a brand bigger than just ABC and to be a partner to newsrooms across the state. And I will tell you what I learned most was the world outside of the TV market in Phoenix that I thought was everything, and understanding how quintessentially critical local media is to big and small communities, and how important those relationships and trust is. And traveling the state, going to places like Yuma or up to the Navajo Nation, and walking through a radio station or a television station and hearing the stories and the connection to the community, it was pretty humbling. And it helped, I think, us to chart a very creative path forward to figure out how do we create more collaboration amongst news brands at a very complicated time for media, where you don't have to work in media to know that it faces challenging times and that there is fragmentation and we're all consuming content in different ways.
I think a lot of people think of media, especially when they hear it kind of in the national news, as this monolith, as this big, industry that we all kind of have the same resources and we do the same things. But when you learned about local news in the state of Arizona, and that's the only, I've only worked in small local news services in Arizona, mostly public radio, it really varies. Like it could be one person in their bedroom. It could be, a small office of three. It could be 10 people with just an idea. It's really varied how it's structured, both in broadcasting and in print, and now obviously
It is
digital.
so different and also amazing to see what in small markets really smart, savvy humans can do with very limited resources to touch broad audiences. And as many resources exist in a place like the 100-person newsroom at ABC, I would tell you that the quantity and quality of content that gets produced in a lot of our small markets with a tenth of that staff is up to the same level. And you just have to get creative and you have to find ways to make it work. And I'm sure you have had moments where you've had to navigate that in your world too.
And I think also there, for small markets like mine or for small shops like mine, the people that work there, they want to be there. There's a passion often for their communities that they really want to represent these areas that don't have these monolith medias.
And I think that's actually a statement that is more true now in journalism across the country than at any time in its history, partially because there has been such a transition with budget cuts and with audience habit transitions, where if you weren't in it for the heart and the passion, you moved on to something else. if you're in journalism today, if you're working at a small radio station or TV station or newspaper or digital startup, you're in it because you believe in what it does for community connection and you believe in what it does to build the place that you live into a better place. And I think that's a really positive thing because we need that more than ever.
During your time at the Arizona Broadcasters Association, which is the original organization that you joined, when did a dialogue start to form about bringing media together, bringing newspapers and broadcasts together?
I think, like a lot of things in life, COVID was a bellwether moment. And coming out of COVID, there were opportunities where local media brands needed to collaborate. As we were going through the shutdowns and the navigations of what you could do and where you could do it and what was safe and what wasn't, we were able to creatively rally media brands together for news conferences with the governor or town halls with state leaders or even just shared updates because, right, there's only so many resources to tell the stories. And that created this coalescence of, gosh, what if we could do this on a more regular basis? What if we could bring media brands, regardless of platform, together in order to build for the common good? And that led to a multi-year process that ended up forming what today is not the Arizona Broadcasters Association, but is an entity called the Arizona Media Association that now represents 400 TV stations, radio stations, newspapers, and digital startups all across the state. And as shocking as this sounds, we are the only state in America that has figured that out and has broken down these platform barriers and walls to create this kind of open source coalition to build community with all of these diverse media platforms.
Do you think it'll be a trend? Because it seems like a good idea.
It is absolutely something that will have to happen elsewhere, but it doesn't mean it's not hard. As somebody that works in media, you know that there are legacy entrenched, right, feelings around radio's better or TV's better, or my platform is the future and your platform is the past. And we were really lucky in that we had a bunch of very forward-thinking board members on all sides of the aisle, because in order to create this coalition, we had to merge a couple of associations together. And in doing so, we had to get a bunch of leaders of media brands across the state to say, this is worth our effort and worth our time. And I'll tell you how we did it. The way we did it is we inspired a shared vision for what the future can look like. And we have been able to build really successful models that have helped us to scale everything from shared news gathering to expanded internships to get more young people exposed to what local media career paths can look like. And something as big and bold as partnering with the state to produce and distribute debates about the biggest political races that hit us every year. We, in 2024, I believe, produced 30 debates, everything from a US Senate debate last year in 2024 to congressional races to key propositions. And using the scale and reach of 400 media brands, you can, I think, pretty easily imagine how much impact that has on making democracy and this sacred act of voting more accessible to humans.
I can tell you too, as one of the areas in the state, Congressional District 7, in the last special election, it was nice that you continued that, even for one election in the state. It was really a great resource for us and for other smaller media in La Paz and Yuma counties.
And we've been able to build a model where, heading into 2026, the partnership will remain alive. And we're looking to double down and expand that reach, add more debates, and figure out creatively how do we make sure that those debates get in front of as many people as possible. Because, again, in this fragmented world, everybody isn't necessarily coalescing around a radio station or a TV station or a newspaper or even a website or an app. Everyone has their preferred ways to consume content. So our job as part of this coalition is to make sure that something as important as a debate, using this example, is available in all of those places. And so we produce it in partnership with the state, give it to media brands at zero cost, and allow them to use it however they see fit to get it in front of their audiences. And I think it's a model that is not only been very successful up till now, but is a model that we are trying to scale out nationwide because it's the type of way that we get people back to the table when we're so divided.
And I can tell you, I don't often editorialize much, but I really felt like, from a small station perspective, that there was this renewed sort of reaching out to smaller media organizations like mine, that you made an effort to remind us that we were part of this organization too, or as you said, it maybe had gotten a little, I don't know what the right word would be, but fallow maybe might work for a while, but it really felt like a renewed interest in some of what smaller media was doing, and I noticed that and felt that I think almost immediately after COVID, I started feeling like there were more resources for us statewide, and that there was a more cohesive industry sort of coming together in a way that it hadn't before. Did you feel that, or were you sort of in a bubble in Phoenix thinking that that had already happened?
No, I definitely felt it, but I take it a step further and say, I feel like media is in the middle of its own cycle where it started 50, 75 years ago, very, very local, and then became very, very corporate and very big, dominated in the major cities, dominated even further in New York and LA and DC. And with this fragmentation, I actually think the reverse is in the process of happening, and the cycle is going back to localism. And I feel like we are just at the cutting edge of that process and building this coalition. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing to bring local news and local media back to the local communities it serves instead of relying on a New York or an LA to pipe in content from a place that may not be as relevant to people that live in Phoenix or Yuma or Prescott or Nogales.
It also was necessary because, and you helped identify this, your organization did. There are pockets of the state where there is no newspaper, where there might be one radio station serving a small area. They're piping in TV from Phoenix, possibly even Vegas or San Diego in some areas. Talk a little bit about identifying those places where these resources really do make a difference.
Yeah, the term I use a lot, and maybe many of your listeners know this too, is news deserts, places where there isn't content produced within 50 miles of the location. And there are a lot of them in a state as geographically large as Arizona. You get 50 or 60 or 70 miles out of Phoenix, and you get to places, even I'll use Globe, Arizona is an example. There are just a handful of radio stations left, very little news, and a newspaper that has been struggling to survive. And it's very close to becoming a news desert. And yet, it's a community where people live, where there is commerce and business and schools. And my fear as a citizen is, well, who's holding that city council accountable with public funds? What happens when there's a wildfire that breaks out in Globe? What happens if there are torrential rains and mudslides that hit that area? Who's covering that, and who's alerting people to the cleanup and the process to keep them and their families safe? The answer is nobody without those local news brands. And yes, the government may be there with emergency alerts that come out on your phone or that you still hear on a radio station or a TV station that's still producing content, but that's different than the storytelling, hand-holding, live minute-by-minute account to make sure it gets you through an emergency situation. And I think that is one of the most important roles that local news serves, not to mention the role it creates just as a community connector for commerce too. How do you know about what's happening in your community? How do you know about the parades or the concerts or the weekend festivals or anything that just helps you enjoy life and know what's going on?
And social media has obviously changed the way that we consume news, but it's kind of a double-edged sword because we're also learning in the news to use social media to get out what we hope is sometimes better content. Talk a little bit about how social media has shaped things, and do you think that really kicked in during COVID when people were sort of kind of trapped and couldn't maybe travel as much. I don't know why I'm kind of drawing that as the timeline, but it maybe just for me, it felt like we all got a little more tech savvy during that time period.
Yeah, I feel like we're at a key moment for social media, an inflection point. And I'm not sure, candidly, where it goes from here. I think through the 2010s became something that so many of us used in different ways to connect with people that we didn't see or only knew about because we saw them on our feeds. And then through COVID, it became a lifeline. And yet we also have seen the disastrous effects of social media, where it can spread false rumors, where it can spread hate, where it allows people to hide behind a nameless face. And that creates all sorts of divisiveness. And I think there's a reckoning that's happening in communities all across the country to figure out what the future of that is. I'm sure you saw in Australia just a couple of days ago, they announced that they're banning social media for any kid under 16. Enforcement sounds hard, and yet it's hard not to understand how impactful and influential social media can be on any human, young or old. And I'm really fascinated to see, especially with the integration of AI, how the future of AI or how the future of social media shakes out.
Yeah, I'm of the belief that you can't create community with a national gaze. That if you're looking outward for your information and details on even just how to live your life day to day, that doesn't create community. But if you're looking into your community and getting that information, that's how connection is formed. How do we encourage news consumers to sort of, and I know this is kind of the goal of the AMA, right? What do you do to encourage news consumers to have that trust and to maybe take a chance and reach out to media or consume media that maybe they weren't consuming before?
Yep, you start with transparency, and I think it's more important than ever before. I am a strong and ardent advocate that journalists in local newsrooms all across the country, but especially here in Arizona, since I know them and talk to them regularly, are some of the most trustworthy human beings I have ever met. And yet, we live in a world where, especially with AI, there is rampant skepticism. And so I think peeling back the curtain and making sure journalists explain not just how they do things, but why they do things goes a really long way. The other thing that I am finding is hugely impactful is local journalism is impactful because it's local journalism. And that means getting out into the community. Our community needs to see and know and shake hands and talk to these local journalists, and not just over the phone or across social media, but in person. And so, whether it's at community events or just getting out and about and meeting people at restaurants and at shopping malls, there are so many ways to make sure that if you are a journalist or if you are a community member, that you feel like the person that's supplying you this news and information is someone that you can trust. And I think if you don't have that, local journalism is going to die. But if you do have that and the human connection is so critical to that piece, it sets local journalism apart from everything else out there.
So we've had the KAWC student newsroom going for about a year and a half now, 2 years this summer, or next summer actually. And I have to say I've gotten a real goose by having these young people come into the studios with their ideas and their kind of knowledge base that's a little different than mine sometimes. What has been encouraging for you about the next generation of journalists? What do you think these younger even Gen Z, even Gen Alpha, what are they going to bring to the table that we need to be aware of?
They are so savvy with digital platforms and have such a hunger for a more creative presentation of news. They're brainstorming and bringing ideas to the table of how you can tell news through ChatGPT or how you can tell news more creatively through TikTok. And love those platforms or hate those platforms, that is the type of innovation that's needed because at the end of the day, journalism has to go where the audiences are. We have to figure out the revenue models, to fund that journalism, but it starts and stops with the content being accessible to the right people. And if you're doing it on, let's say, a television station that people aren't watching in the same way they were 10 years ago, or in a newspaper that isn't being consumed in the same way it was 10 years ago, then you got to pivot. And that doesn't mean that the brand dies. It just means that the distribution model has to evolve, and that your sales or philanthropic team that's helping you to drive new revenues has to be there in lockstep with you, figuring out the way to keep the coffers full to fund the journalism that's getting in front of those audiences.
Well, Chris, it feels to me like your tenure at, I'm going to say AMA instead of ABA because it changed, has been a real sea change for how organizations interact and what the future might hold. Do you see that?
I mean, look, we're always, I think, more critical of ourselves because we see the things we did well and we see the things that we wish we had been able to do. But I couldn't be more proud of where we are today in comparison to where we were even just 2 or 3 years ago. And I think there is an incredibly bright future for what local news and local journalism looks like. I think it will continue to change, and I think it may continue to change very dramatically. But the fundamentals are strong, and we have the right people in place. And as long as we continue to have innovation and we continue to have a community that sees the value of local storytelling to make the places that they live better, local journalism will keep thriving.
I don't want to end on a negative, but what maybe didn't you accomplish that you would have liked?
Well, the collaboration piece is a place where there is no limit to what we can do. And there is so much more opportunity for us to share resources, to take a story that's produced in Yuma and either showcase it in Phoenix or take the theme and rebuild it for Phoenix. And in an era where resources are tighter than ever, I think that shared model is going to be pretty darn critical to the future. I also am fascinated by the rise of more nonprofit news and nonprofit journalism. I think most people know that we live in a community where a lot of journalism has historically been commercialized, right? You see ads on television, you listen to ads on the radio. And thankfully, those things have funded vast amounts of journalism. But as that model ebbs and flows and is a little more challenged, I think it's nonprofit journalism and local philanthropy and local partners that is likely to be a increasing force in the future of journalism. And, you know, I'm hungry to see how that plays out. And I think it's going to need a lot of tender love and care in order to build a sustainable model that perhaps can carry us for the next 50 years.
Yeah, you're moving on to a new role. I'm moving on from my role here. Do you think we can trust that things will be okay?
Well, here's how I'm trusting that things will be okay. I may be stepping back from the CEO role, but I'm just joining the board. So I'm staying involved. I'm passionate about this industry. I know you are passionate about this industry. And as long as all of us that are on the other side of the curtain keep pushing and live that transparency and go build bridges with the communities that we serve, I think we're in pretty good hands.
All right. That's Chris Klein, president and CEO of the Arizona Media Association. I guess not for much longer, but you'll still be involved.
Thank you, Lou.
I really appreciate your time, Chris.
This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. I'm Lou Gum. We've been talking with Chris Klein, outgoing president and CEO of the Arizona Media Association. Klein is stepping down soon to become president and CEO of Desert Botanical Garden, and we wish him luck. I am also in transition. As I leave KAWC, I've taken early retirement to focus on new projects and new ways to explore how I can contribute to the media landscape of Arizona. As I have your ear, I'd like to personally thank some people who've helped me in my work and helped establish KAWC as a trusted news source for Yuma and La Paz counties. First and foremost is Dave Reek, KAWC's general manager, who's been a friend and guiding voice in my life for nearly 40 years. Next, Alice Ferris and Jim Anderson, who make up part of our development team, for their unwavering support for the station and for me. Steve Hennig, KAWC's underwriting manager, isn't just a great coworker, but as you hear each week on this podcast, is the composer of our theme music. It's called Lou's Tune, if you didn't know. Everyone should have at least one musician friend. To Victor Calderon, Alex Rangel, and Cisco Stargazer, our current threesome of news gatherers, these last months with you have been some of the most fulfilling of my career. Thanks to your dedication and excellently presented work, I am proud to have led you, and even prouder to leave you to your own ideas and motivations. To Kevin Cotto, our now former advisor to the KAWC Student Newsroom, the project could not have gotten off the ground without your help and support and the positive leadership and intellect you shared with me and our students. To all the people who sat down with me for interviews, not just for the content you helped us bring to the community, but for the before and after conversations that expanded my understanding of the community and you personally. A reminder that the voices we share aren't disembodied or disconnected from the people and places they serve and work. To the endless line of politicians and candidates for office that saw the value in speaking with local public media and more often than not treated me and my team with great respect. And finally to you, the listeners of KAWC and this podcast, for sticking with us over the years, allowing us to experiment and fail, and for believing in our mission and your role in it. I'm honored to have served this community as a reporter and a journalist. KAWC's Arizona Edition is a production of KAWC, Colorado River Public Media. Questions or comments are welcome. Send them to azed@kawc.org. Our theme music was used with permission and composed by Stephen Hennig and performed by members of the Yuma Jazz Company. More information at yumajazz.com. Past shows and podcast information is available online. Visit kawc.org for more information or search Arizona Edition wherever you get your podcasts. You can also take KAWC with you wherever you go. Just download the KAWC COFA app and the listening is in your hands. I'm Lou Gum. This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. I say it all the time and I mean it. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.